Steve, thanks. Hi, guys. It's us. It's Bill Leff. It's Wendy Snyder. Welcome to the show. It's our Halloween show. A lot of great guests.
It's going to be action-packed, and I can't wait to get a picture with Sven Gulli as me as Ozzy Osbourne.
Yeah. For people who didn't hear the crosstalk with Steve just moments ago, Wendy, who said you would not dress up, you were adamant that this is not a holiday to be played out by adults. This is for the kids. But you went all out, and you're dressed like Ozzy Osbourne, and you look exactly like Ozzy Osbourne.
I don't know if that's
more
a compliment.
Like him than he looks like himself at this point. I'm not kidding.
I feel bad because I really didn't put much effort. I just made my eyes a little darker than usual.
Yeah.
Honestly, if I took this wig off, you'd just go, oh, there's Wendy coming to
work. It's just another day. But you real, I mean, everyone who looks at you knows you are Ozzy Osbourne. There's nobody.
The tattoo makes it.
On your knuckles is written the word Ozzy, as he has the knuckle tattoos. But there's no doubt about who you are.
Really?
Yeah, there's no doubt about it. I had to explain, Walter Jacobson is here, and I had to explain, he thought you were Burt Lancaster, but everybody else knows that you are Ozzy.
Burt Lancaster.
Yeah, I don't know. Oh, Wendy's Burt Lancaster, and I go, no, Ozzy Osbourne.
Well, I didn't dress up to make you feel bad. Bertrand didn't dress up today either.
No.
Apparently, no. I have forced dressing coming.
See,
there's
I only
a mandate
did this
from
for
management
Stephanie.
That said that it's a must. We must dress in costume.
And it's Steve Cochran's fault because yesterday he said, it's the least I can do, and it makes Stephanie happy.
Oh,
then
yeah,
I felt guilty.
Then you have to.
That's my Catholic guilt, making me look like Ozzy Osbourne.
Right. May I ask this? I've often heard women say, like if they normally have darker hair, so there will be a day that they'll be blonde for whatever reason, and they'll say that the world treats them differently based on their hair color, based on the way they look. Have you been treated differently at all today because your hair is dramatically different?
It's black.
It is jet black.
I haven't really gone out anywhere yet.
No?
I was hoping I wouldn't get a flat tire or get in an accident on the way here because that would have embarrassed me.
Do you feel, though, like if you went in and say you had to get gasoline and you just went into a Quick Mart? Yeah, gasoline. It makes your car go faster.
It makes your car go.
Yeah, it doesn't even have to be faster. But if you went in, do you think you'd be treated a little bit differently? You're dressed very, obviously, because you're Ozzy Osbourne, you're dressed rough and tough.
I think they would go, what's the goth chick's problem?
Oh, interesting.
Is that a chick? That's what they'd say.
Interesting.
And stay away from her, probably.
Yeah. She's trouble.
Especially in the bathroom.
Got trouble written
I've had
all
brown
over.
Hair before, and I like to play with hair color.
Yeah.
And I don't notice anyone treating me differently because people know me. I mean, if I came across a stranger, I never really took a poll.
Yeah.
So can I say something I'm going to regret?
Yeah. Please.
So you said earlier you're the blonde Ozzy Osbourne?
Yeah, because honestly, this whole outfit is something I would wear.
You own all these clothes.
No, I get that, but I wouldn't say you're blonde. I don't get...
In real life, Steve?
Yeah, I don't know what color of hair I would say you had, though.
It's more blonde.
it's two-toned.
There's other colors that show
it's
up.
It's mainly blonde and with some low lights as well, but I would say I was a blonde.
Okay.
More than any other color.
I have this conversation with a lot of women. It's just this weird thing with
what
me.
What color
How does
would
that
you
go?
Say, Steve?
Never well. That's what I mean.
He knew you would regret it.
It's a weird thing.
What color would you say it is predominantly, more than blonde?
I think I would say light brown or something, but...
My girl did not bleach it as much as I wanted to this time, but typically I've been blonde my whole life.
Yeah.
Although now I'm probably gray.
Yeah. Oh.
If I let it all grow out.
I think after today, you'll want to keep this color, Wendy. I think this is definitely.
A good look.
I'm too fair skinned.
I like the smooth look of it.
Yeah.
That is very popular now.
It's very popular now, growing out your gray.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I'm doing, Bill.
Yeah.
Who is
a woman?
Not Crystal Gayle. Who's the country star that has the Emmy Lou Harris?
Oh,
Crystal Light.
Definitely.
She looks She looks great.
Yeah.
It's like some gray can be yellowy. If you have a nice looking gray, I say go for it.
Yeah. Jamie Lee Curtis.
She's gray now?
All gray. Yeah.
She's like white.
Yeah. It's like
she's
a grayish white.
Yeah.
Carol on Walking Dead.
Yeah, that
All
looks good
gray,
on her.
That works for her.
Salt and peppery.
Katy Perry. She's got the white going.
Yeah, but see, now a lot of young girls are bleaching or dyeing their hair to look gray. And it's like, just hang in there. It'll happen after 50.
Why, so how
young would you go? Like, are you saying a girl?
Well, Katy Perry, for instance.
Oh, yeah, I guess, yeah. So she's in her 30s, right?
Yeah, but I mean, I've seen probably not high
that?
Schoolers, but you know, mid 20s. You see,
really?
It's very popular. Go on Pinterest.
That's a good deal now.
Where's that? I'm gonna find where that is.
P-I-N.
Yeah. I'll put that in my GPS. See if I can
thought
get there.
You had a Pinterest. Page.
I may have one. I may have
for
one.
All your crafts.
Yeah,
your needle pointing.
That's on my Etsy page. When
oh,
you know
okay.
That.
Well,
that's,
it's next to Etsy.
Is it right now? Yeah, in the neighborhood of that. Okay. So you don't feel any different, you know, because every once in a while I'll look up and I'm expecting to see you the way you normally look. And then I say, uh-oh, what is this all about?
Are you having trouble looking at me a little bit?
It's a, if I'm not thinking about it and I just quickly glance up, I go, ooh, so what, everything's different. The world's different now.
My boys were getting ready for school as I was leaving. Michael, my oldest, said, I got to admit, Mom, that's pretty great.
Oh.
Dylan says to me, my youngest, that looks good, but I can't look at you. And I said, why? He goes, it's just weird.
Yeah, I understand. You understand that, though?
Yeah, but that's why costumes happen.
Yeah, true. For people who want to see Wendy's look, it'll be on Facebook momentarily. If it isn't already up there, I think it may already be up there, so you can see how much she looks just like Ozzy Osbourne.
Although I look more like Ozzy with the glasses on, but I got to keep them down a
yeah,
little bit.
Yeah, he does. He
and
does.
They're pinching my nose.
Oh.
So I may not have them on.
Oh, all right. We can Photoshop those in.
Do you want me to look the other way? Do you want me not to look at you?
No. I'll get used to it.
You're staring at me.
By the end of business day today, I will be used to it. And then tomorrow you'll scare me for different reasons. I'll go,
I know.
Where'd Ozzy Osbourne go? It's crazy. All right, we'll take a break. We have a lot of great show things planned for you, so stick around. It's Bill and it's Wendy on WGN.
He did the monster mash. The monster mash. It was a graveyard.
Bobby
smash.
Boris Pickett.
This is my favorite Bobby Boris Pickett song of all time, Wendy.
Isn't
of all the songs he ever did, this I think is his best work.
I had this single.
Did you? Yeah,
I did.
Brings back memories.
Yeah.
1971, maybe 73.
Yeah. To get a jolt. Although, if you said to a kid now, whose voice is Bobby Boris Pickett emulating, most kids would not know.
Who? Boris Karloff?
Boris Karloff. Very good.
I never really thought about
Very
it.
Very good. Did you see the stat that 86% of parents are stealing candy from their kids?
Did they do the Jimmy Kimmel thing yet?
No. That always happens like the day, either the day after Halloween or 2 days after Halloween.
Are you going to watch it again?
I will watch it. I will cherish every second of it. It's the meanest thing you'll see on TV all year.
I don't know. Kids steal groceries from their parents all the time.
Yes, they do, Steve.
We have to feed them. They're not stealing.
So does this constitute stealing? And you all know the drill. The kid goes out and spends a couple hours trick-or-treating, sometimes in inclement weather. Brings the candy home, dozes off, falls asleep, and then you, the parent, you sift through it going, you know, some Whoppers right about now would be pretty good. So
listen,
you take them.
You say, you know, sometimes in inclement weather, like it's work.
Yes,
you know.
It is work. It is work.
they go through. It's like a postman. They always deliver.
Steve, when my kids were little, when Reese and Kylie were little, they'd be done. They'd be, all right, we did this for 2 hours. Let's go. And I'd go, oh, no.
You got to keep going.
It's 1 day a year. You got to put your time in.
You know, our kids are more slackers than we were because I'm telling you, weren't you out for hours
start
at a time?
Start to finish.
Until 10 o'clock, probably.
Yeah, and beyond. My friends and I would always, on the way home from school, because in school you always had to dress the part. You dressed for Halloween. So as soon as that bell rang, we were hitting houses right away.
Then you were ringing bells.
Yes, and all the way up until the deadline and beyond.
And I just remember staying out forever, and I never used a pillowcase. Can I tell you that?
For the candy?
Yeah, I never
did.
You get
a plastic pumpkin from Walgreens, right?
Yeah, but then you'd have to come home and dump that out.
Yeah.
Because I just kept going, and I got so much candy, I couldn't imagine it. And same thing with my kids. It's like a couple hours. They barely filled up the pumpkin. I'm like, get back to work.
Right. What's wrong with you kids?
Although I never had to steal stuff from them. They shared whatever I wanted, I could
take. Did they?
Honest to God.
Isn't that strange? I don't think my parents ever took any from me, but I think any kid will go, no, my parents wouldn't take my Halloween candy.
No, your mom had them all in jars on the kitchen counter.
She had better candy. She did. She did. But I didn't feel like my parents were going to sneak into my room. I mean, I kept it right out in the open, but maybe they did and just never told me. But I know I took my kids' candy.
Did you sneak into their room?
No, you know, here's the strangest thing about both my daughters. They're not that into candy. Like, it's no big deal to them. They don't. It doesn't do anything for them.
The only time my kids and myself are into candy is when I pre-buy it for Halloween and we seem to eat it before.
Yeah.
We have so much candy. Jim bought these giant bags and I feel guilty because he came home and I said, those are great. I said, make sure you get good stuff.
Right.
Because I don't believe in the theory of getting stuff you don't like so you won't eat it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know what? If get the stuff over. You like. Otherwise, you're wasting your money. Would you buy a shirt you didn't like?
We always did that. I always bought the hard candies and those the sour things that I would never want to eat.
Really? And,
like lemon heads, you mean, Steve, or what?
They were just, you'd buy those big bags of mixed things.
Yeah.
That's what I yelled at Jim for getting.
Yeah, I don't get
those
that.
Because there are minis. There are mini Snickers, like it's a, like the size of
it's
a,
like
a melt away.
Well,
like a
I
one
did
bite.
Those this year, right.
And I said, what are you doing? You have to get fun size. You can't get minis. And he goes, give them three or four.
Can I ask you a question about the fun size? And I mean this sincerely. Who decides exactly which size is fun?
Quite honestly, I think king size should be the fun size.
That's fun.
Yeah.
A bigger candy bar than you're accustomed to. Now we're having fun. A smaller one.
Not that fun.
It's a jip size. You got jipped. That's what they should call those. Jip size Snickers. I'm not going there again.
I don't think that's politically correct anymore.
No, it's not.
I don't think so.
I apologize to anybody skimping on their candy.
But the minis, and here's the thing, is that it was a great combination. You had Twix. You had crispy M&Ms.
Well, it depended on which brand's assortment pack you were buying.
Because he got a Skittles thing, too.
Yeah.
And they mixed fun size with the minis.
No.
And I said, Jim, how could you do it? He's like, I spent $40 on this. And I said, Walgreens had buy one, get one free. So I went back and doubled up on the Kit Kats
Good
and
move.
The Twix.
Little caveat there.
Yes.
Because I was shopping at Walgreens yesterday. I'm like, what a deal. It was buy one, get the other one half off.
That was the larger bags. The smaller bags, which only have like 12 candy bars in it,
those were
buy one, get one free for $3.99.
Because I brought three to the register, and they're like, yeah, you got to buy another one to get 50%. I'm like, wait a minute.
Well, I backed up because Jim is going to see Bob Weir tonight with his brother.
Yeah.
Like front row meet and greet at the Chicago Theater. And I said, really? So I have to be at home with the crappy candy you bought and I'm going to run out? So I got backups.
Horrible. That's not right at all.
I know.
We still have not purchased any Halloween candy. For reasons I don't understand. No.
Walgreens was out of it. They were restocking last night, but...
I was in Jewel last night buying other things, more important things, and there's just tons of candy. And it's not like we're waiting. The price will go down tomorrow. It's not like
Is that when you're going to buy it and then
we'll
save it for next year?
We're going to hand out IOUs to kids. Come back. Come back within 24 hours. We'll stamp a time on it, and you must return. It's like the Fast Pass at Disney.
Yeah.
You must return between this time and this time. And we will have candy for you at this time tomorrow.
Did I say Bob Weir or Bill Weir? Because it wasn't Bill Weir.
Bill Weir was a WGN.
I think that's who I said. He is not at the Chicago
You said Bob
Theater.
Weir.
Oh, okay. Because I got confused. I confused myself. Judy has called us. Hey, Jude.
Hey, how you doing? I just wanted to tell you, I was back in the day with the pillowcase out all the neighborhood. I'm a little bit older than you guys. But what we would do is you go out, come home, do a quick sort through your bag of the stuff you didn't like. Then you could trade piece for piece the bowl that Mom had of what we liked.
That's
a great idea.
She'd give out the crappy stuff, and we'd only have the good stuff left.
That's a great idea.
That is a good idea.
Yeah, and so that way, you always had the stuff you liked, and you didn't waste the other stuff, because some other poor kid got the popcorn ball.
And Judy, Steve Bertrand at his house, they're giving out ketchup packets. That's not a good thing for kids, is it?
Unless they need to make soup.
Oh, maybe. Right.
Soup?
No, soup. They like them better when you show them how to step on them.
Oh, that's true, too. Like, the popper's only messy.
Yeah.
Thank you, Judy. Happy Halloween.
You too. Bye-bye.
You give me a great idea, because we have a ton of Taco Bell sauces in the drawer in case I run out.
That's a great...
Mild and fiery.
Let the kid decide.
All right.
Hold out the assortment bag and just say, it's up to you. Take one. You get one. All right, let's take a little break. Did I mention Svengoolie's going to be by later
on? I'm pretty psyched. I love him so much.
An annual visit to the show. I think this is 4 or 5 years in a row that we've had Svengoolie on for Halloween.
Look, I mean, come on. We are the luckiest radio show in town to get him every year.
I don't disagree.
On Halloween.
And I almost hate to give this away, but he has a huge, huge honor being bestowed upon him.
It's been in the news. Don't you read Feeder?
Yeah, I do. But I don't know if everybody else already knows
this.
Everyone knows this?
It is really great.
All right. Yeah,
You're jealous, too.
I'm not jealous, but I'm so happy for him. This is big. So we'll talk to him later on. There's a lot coming your way next. It's Bill and Wendy, WGN.
What is wrong with me? All of a sudden, I'm enjoying Halloween this year.
Who are you? I don't know what happened to you. Good. It's supposed to be that way.
But I hated it yesterday.
But now you love it because you're dressed for...
I think it's because I dressed up.
That made all the difference.
Did you open your closet door and were hit by a pumpkin or something?
No, I don't. I just think it's because now I'm into the spirit of it because
sure.
I dressed up.
Sure.
Maybe I'm going to dress up every year. I know what I'm going to be next year.
What?
Can I don't know if I should tell you, but I swear to God, I'm going to do my best job.
I can wait a whole year.
Phyllis Diller.
Ah, that'll be great. I wish it were next year, Wendy.
Do you have all that stuff at home, too?
No, that I'm going to have to go buy.
You have to rent some of that.
You have a moo-moo at home?
I need a psychedelic moo-moo. That's a great band name if no one's using it.
Ladies and gentlemen, the psychedelic moo-moos. Wendy, look who's on the phone line. It's Ursula Bielski, paranormal researcher and founder of Chicago Hauntings, here to tell you about some very scary things for Halloween. Ursula, my belief is that you and Wendy are not meant to meet in person.
I know.
Isn't that the truth?
Yeah.
It is so weird.
Every year you come in around Halloween, and it's
so
always
weird.
On a day that Wendy is off for various reasons. Today, Wendy's here, but you can't come in. Are you a little under the weather? Is that what's going on?
Yeah, I've got the flu. I got a still have almost 102 fever. Oh. I feel just run down. I don't have any respiratory stuff, thank goodness. But
take some boomer aspirin.
That was a stretch, a little pun on bear aspirin.
Somebody texted it in, Wendy.
That's
817 texted that in.
That is very scary.
That is.
Well, we hope you're feeling better. This is a horrible time of year to be sick, especially for somebody who runs like you run.
It is. It really is. It's been terrible.
All right, let's go to the basics for people who have never heard you before. Chicago and the outlying suburbs are some of the most haunted places in the country, correct?
They really are, and there's different aspects of this that we think lead to this to Chicago being known as so haunted. And one of them is the prevalence of water in Chicago. Of course, we're right on the shore of Lake Michigan, one of the largest bodies of fresh water in the world, and we have the Chicago River, the Des Plaines River, and all sorts of other natural and man-made waterways, especially along like the Archer Avenue corridor, which is one of the most haunted regions in the country, with the Illinois and Michigan Canal and the Calzag Channel, the Sanitary Ship Canal. Paranormal researchers think that water, especially running water, is a great conduit for paranormal activity because we think it's made up of electricity. So being such a great conduit for that, anywhere where there's a lot of water, like Chicago, New Orleans, Key West, the British Isles, you're going to find a larger concentration of ghost stories, and we think that's no accident. We think that's definitely a connection. Another thing about... I'm sorry, go ahead.
I was just going to say, is it because of any kind of maritime accidents on the water? Does that play into it or not?
You know, it's definitely a part of it. We have, you know, most people know now that we have, you know, one of the worst disasters in American history that happened on the Chicago River in 1915, the Eastland disaster. We just passed the 100th anniversary a couple of years ago. There were 844 people who died in 19 feet of water on that Saturday morning in the summertime. And that spot on the river, this is between the LaSalle Street Bridge and the Clark Street Bridge, that is still a location where so many people visit that site and they hear screaming and crying coming from the water. They hear cries for help. They see bodies flowing around in the water. And a lot of people, most interesting to me, I think, feel compelled to jump into the water there, not knowing what happened there. It's almost as if they're feeling that panic of that day when so many people did jump into the water to try and help those struggling bodies in the water. A lot of people know that the old regimental armory on Washington Boulevard, where Oprah had Harpo Studios, was the main morgue used for the victims of the Eastland, and that is now the new McDonald's headquarters. So we're just waiting here, waiting by the phones, waiting for the calls to start coming in from the employees there.
But people connected with Oprah Studios said that a lot of weird stuff was going on there. Not all Gail King related either. But just that they felt weird presences there all the time,
yeah.
huh?
Yeah, even she talked about it at first when she first moved in, about the things that people were experiencing and that she herself was experiencing. She even did an episode of her show that was devoted to the history of the building and the things that the staff was experiencing. So, yeah, it was definitely prevalent there. And I've spoken to a lot of people over the years that worked in the building that had very profound experiences there. So, yeah, definitely. There's been so many disasters on Lake Michigan and the Chicago River. You know, Lake Michigan has its own kind of mini Bermuda Triangle that goes from Chicago to Ludington, Michigan, to Manitowoc, Wisconsin. And inside that triangle happen all the same sorts of things that happen within the Bermuda Triangle, such as ships and planes disappearing, sometimes permanently, sometimes for a short period of time, instruments malfunctioning, and interestingly, people having experiences with their deceased loved ones when they're sailing or flying through that area. So a lot of unusual activity, yeah, definitely connected with events on Lake Michigan and our waterways also.
All right. I 100% believe in this. So I am just captivated by everything you're telling us, Ursula. And I wonder, like, can you ever see a ghost that looks like a ghost? A lot of people take pictures and it's like, oh, look in that window. Or is it more just like a presence or an energy? Or could it be both?
Absolutely both. You know, when people think about encountering a ghost, they're always thinking about seeing this, you know, white filmy form, or seeing like a full body apparition, like maybe a transparent person who's there 1 minute and gone the next. But, you know, we'd always tell people who come on our ghost tours and when we head up investigations for the public, the number one way that these entities interact with us is by influencing our systems, our bodily physical systems, and our mental space too. So to be aware when you go into a place, you know, expecting to encounter a ghost, to be aware of changes in how you feel, that you might start to feel a little nauseous or get a headache or feel a little dizzy, because this is, again, it's electricity or energy in connecting with you. You might also have emotional responses to an area. You might become angry. You might become upset or sad because you're being influenced by something, maybe some residual energy from an event in the past, or by an entity that's intelligent, that's there, that you can't see. So there are all different ways that we do encounter these entities, and they are not usually visual, where we expect to see a ghost, or which is what a lot of people expect to do. But they can be those filmy forms or balls of light that are sometimes captured by cameras or video cameras. So that does happen, but that's not the most usual encounter.
In movies and TV shows, Ursula, ghosts always have unfinished business. That's why they want to come back. Is that true in real life or just in movies and TV?
Absolutely. That's probably the number one reason why we still have these entities that are around. You know, we have free will in life. We have free will after death. People just assume, whenever I hear the phrase like, well, they're at peace now, you know, there's some like horrible person that caused chaos and havoc and was always unhappy and angry in life. And people think, oh, well, they're dead now, and they went on, and now they're at peace. That is totally not the case at all. We lose our bodily form, but we still have stuff to work out. I think every medium that I've ever talked to has clarified that. So this part of our physical, you know, this part of our life, our physical life, is just part of it. And when we lose our body, we still have a lot of stuff to work out, and some people more than others. And how quickly you do that definitely depends on what kind of personality you have in life, because that personality survives death. So, yeah, you can have a very demure person who's, like, cool, gets along with everybody, is, you know, doesn't want to, like, rock the boat, that will go on after death and you'll never hear from them again. And you can just have some other people that are rattling stuff around, causing all kinds of trouble, keeping people awake at night. And it just really depends on how quickly that person is going to go, you know what, I think it's time for me to let go.
Yeah.
I have this incident, and I think I brought this up to you before. I was just taking a nap on the couch. Michael, my son, was not talking yet, so under 2 years old. And I was awakened to this whispery, Mom, And I just kind of woke up, and I went and checked on him. I wish I had a story like he was choking and I saved him. There was nothing. He was just sound asleep. There's no way he could have said that. And I just, honestly, I'll never forget it. It didn't scare me, really, but it confused me.
It is such just a prevalent experience. So many people, mothers, have that experience. I have not heard it from fathers where they have the same thing, but that specifically being woken up by the sound of usually the voice of your own child calling for you. And I've had the experience myself, and yeah, nothing was wrong. It could be perhaps a child's having a bad dream, and we are somehow connecting with them. Could also be something from ourselves, you know, something, some fear that we have of protecting our child. And, you know, we're always on alert for that.
Yeah.
So it could be something coming from us as well, but it is a very prevalent experience. A lot of people, myself included, think that one day, a lot of the things that we talk about, that we think about as coming from deceased entities, ghosts, if you will, are going to end up to be discovered to come from us. You know, things like wishful thinking, you know, becoming and ending up being real, you know, that we can actually think about things and they happen. We can create experiences like sights and sounds that not only we can experience, but other people can experience. And I think we're going to find that our minds have a lot greater abilities than most people give them credit for today. And so I'm not saying that everything that we call ghosts, you know, or the paranormal is going to come down to human influence, but I do think a lot of it is going to be discovered to be so.
Ursula Bielski is the city's oldest and most acclaimed ghost tour purveyor. You can visit the website. It's ChicagoHaunted.com. Is that right, Ursula? Am I getting it right? Or Hauntings?
ChicagoHauntings.com.
Hauntings.com. On Facebook, it's Chicago Hauntings. On Twitter, it's at Chicago Haunted. We'll pick this up in just a little bit. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN. Bill and Wendy. Our guest is Ursula Bielski, paranormal researcher, founder of Chicago Hauntings. You want to visit ChicagoHauntings.com for more information. Ursula, you've been doing this for quite a while, over 20 years, almost 30 years, right? Do you get scared at all? Yeah. Anything scare you?
I do. You know, I'm a lifelong practicing Catholic, and I found that that's a big difference between myself and some other investigators. My belief system does have me to still have a little fear. I've done a lot of research in the last few years, especially on demonology and differentiating between demons and human spirits, human entities. And I've found that that is a big difference between myself and other investigators. I do have places that I won't go because I feel that there are these kinds of entities there. I've seen the influence that these kinds of places have had on friends of mine, colleagues of mine, in changing their personalities. I think I've experienced that myself several times. So I've gotten a lot. I have gotten in the last few years, I have been doing this for 30 years this year. This is my 30th anniversary as a paranormal researcher. In the last few years, I found that I've become a lot more of a homebody. I do a lot less investigating of places these days and more of observing at a distance, chronicling the experiences of others, because it does take a toll. I found, you know, the colleagues that I've been with for all these years now, it takes a toll. I was just thinking about this yesterday, that some of my friends that have been doing this work for so many years, you really can tell they're old, they're wise, they're haggard. They're worn down. We have a lot of health problems. I don't think it's any accident that we've been exposed to a lot of these locations. Even when we first started taking on additional tour guides at Chicago Hauntings years ago, one of our earliest tour guides, he worked with us. He was wonderful. Worked with us for several years. He was from the Ottawa, Illinois area, LaSalle area, and he was just a great storyteller and had grown up around these stories. His dad worked on a riverboat as an entertainer, and he was just great. But after a couple of years, he said, you know, I hate to do it, but I have to leave because being around these places every night is really, I've gotten sick a lot, and it's really taking a toll. And it really does. When you think of these very strong energies that are still around after death, you know, or the residue that's left behind after these terrible tragedies that happen, taking, you know, hundreds and hundreds of lives, you can't help but have your own body and mind affected by being around these places. That was a little more than what you asked, but I do have a lot of trepidation now, and I'm careful about where I go and what I investigate.
When someone you love passes away, my dad died when I was 10, my mom died when I was 35, and I feel guilty because I don't recall any dreams I've had about them. Bill, your mom passed away. Do you have a lot of dreams about her? Has she appeared?
Like right after she died, within a year or two, I dreamt about her quite a bit. It's dissipated a bit over the years, but I used to a lot, yeah.
Because, Ursula, they say that, you know, our loved ones try to communicate with us, and you need to leave yourself open and see the signs. What should we be looking for?
That's a very interesting question. One of the things people ask me a lot is, if I see my loved one in a dream, does that mean they're trying to communicate with me? I have heard that. I don't know if it's true. There are a lot of different theories about that. I myself, you know, having been a paranormal investigator for 30 years, I've talked to thousands and thousands of people who have had experiences with their loved ones who passed away. My dad passed away in 1986 when I was 19. I've never heard from him, never seen him. And he and I were as close as could be. And he had a very paranormal kind of life where he had a lot of experiences himself. So I assumed that when he passed away that he would come to visit me all the time and things like that, but yeah, he has not. You know, people, I think some of the wisest people that I work with say that you look for signs in your life. You know, there's feelings that you get sometimes that something that's happening to you or something that you think that you should do is coming from the advice of or the support of someone that's on the other side. And I think that's the best thought that I've heard on the whole subject. But they're with us. But, you know, as far as appearing to us in our dreams and things like that, I mean, they're young. You don't have a lot of experience. You know, there's a lot of time between you and those memories.
Yeah.
And we really can't expect ourselves to have that kind of like a visual relationship now, when so many years have passed. So I would look for signs and feelings, you know, in your life and in your, you know, the people that you love and that are around you and your other family members, because I think that's where our loved ones really come to us.
Ursula Bielski, a paranormal researcher, founder of Chicago Hauntings, the city's oldest and most acclaimed ghost tour. Is it year-round, Ursula, or is it only this time of year?
It is year-round. Right.
Excellent.
Now, of course, we're like gangbusters, but we're year-round.
ChicagoHauntings.com is the website you want to visit for more information. ChicagoHauntings.com. Ursula, great talking to you. We hope you feel better,
yeah,
and we'll talk
better
to you soon.
Thank you so much. You have a happy Halloween.
Thank you so much. Thanks. All right, we'll take a quick break. We'll get you some news, and then there's a lot more show ahead.
And the stories that matter are coming up with Steve Bertrand from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom.
Dave Neal is here, Wendy. You know why? Because he's neat. He's sweet.
He's relatively petite.
Relatively petite.
Depending on where you're looking.
Depending on the angle.
Not the hands, of
I
course.
Thought he was creepy and he's kooky.
Well, he is. He's those
I'm
two.
Ookie, too.
Yeah.
People don't know.
It's an ookie.
You are kind of ookie, Dane.
I have been known to be ookie. I've got sort of an ookie reputation.
Dane, of course, the host of On the Road with Dane Neal, which can be heard right here on WGN Radio Saturdays from 2 to 4 p.m. Hi, how are you?
Hi, how are you?
Nice to see you.
Good to be here. You nice guys, you know, it was always great to see you, Bill, and
thanks,
I see that
Dane.
We've dressed up, that was one of the things, as each other, sweatshirts, hats, casual attire.
Yes.
You're showing kind of our easygoing nature.
Business casual.
It's not just on Halloween you try to do that. And then I wondered, like, who, you know, the Prince of Darkness is here with you as
That's
well.
That's right. Shan's at home. She made me scramble eggs this morning.
Wendy with a killer outfit dressed as Ozzy Osbourne.
Now, I can't really tell exactly. You're post-Sabbath Ozzy, or are you kind of Sabbath reunion tour Ozzy?
Sabbath reunion tour.
Yeah.
Looking good.
I'm not paranoid anymore.
Not as crazy, a little more approachable, family friendly. Also
right.
Have all that hits, all the catalogs,
yes,
from Black Sabbath.
Yes.
Plus all the Ozzy, you know, solo hits.
Yeah, and there is a bat accessory, Dane. I don't know if you saw it, but Wendy also has a small bat whose head has been chewed up.
Remember, that was like a big deal.
Yeah.
You know, now
Ozzy's biting the head off of bats.
Steve Bertrand's got like a bucket of bats.
As we speak, yeah, he's biting the head off of bats.
He also bit the head off a pigeon or something, too. I think there were two animals, yes. Wow.
I remember that was during sort of a record producer meeting where they're going to fund his next album or whatever. Yeah. He stopped in, and in order to kind of live up to the crazy element, this is in the book from Sharon, I think, he sat down and he actually did it, like, you know, in the meeting or something. And then it was kind of weirded out. People threw one on stage one time.
Oh, yeah, a lot of times.
Yeah.
Hmm. Yeah.
I'm all about crazy.
Yeah. Yep.
Well, sometimes you want to have it in a concert setting or maybe an important business meeting. You want to have some crazy food. And other times you just want to do it as part of your everyday life. Part of maybe it's a delicacy in a culture that you admire.
Crazy foods.
Crazy and strange foods.
A bat is crazy.
Yes.
Yeah. Yes. I didn't see that. As I did a little bit of research for the segment, as I often do, I did not see the bat head as a delicacy.
Thank goodness, Dane.
And I think for everybody. It just, you know, it takes a village.
What are some of the crazier foods, though, that you came up with? What'd you find?
For the Strange Food Festival, and we've highlighted, we've had them in here. Usually it is around this time of year. They've moved to the summer because some of these foods are better in warmer weather. You'll see things like fried milkworms, like big giant larvae, you know, all fried up.
Why would somebody think that that would be a good food to eat?
A lot of protein.
Is that why?
Okay, so there you go. Correct on the nutrition scale. Certainly it's good for you. It's a good source of protein. They're probably abundant, as a lot of bugs, you know, happen to, you know, they just, you know, recreate their situation. And you know what? A lot of these things, I'm told, I have not, you know, otherwise you I'd be rolling with that fear factor money if I was able to just eat spiders and things. That they taste good. You know, that these things can't, you know.
I don't believe that. Although you fry anything.
Yeah.
Fried cheese, fried vegetables, fried maggots.
But he's like, you wrap that larva with some bacon, maybe we're going to be good to go. So you have things like that in there. You got grasshopper tacos. And you'll
grasshoppers
see that.
Are very popular now.
There's got to be something to it.
Or crickets, I'm sorry. A bag of nacho cheese flavored crickets.
Yeah. It's in the same hopping family. You'll see some of that stuff. Ant larva salad, where you just kind of, it's still a salad that you know and love, but maybe you just a little bit of, you know, just throw some ant larva. No. And then balut from the Filipino community. I've heard about this for a long time.
What is it called?
Balut.
I've heard of that.
And it's a fermented, so you imagine like a duck egg, right? And then imagine it kind of doing what duck eggs do and kind of growing a baby duck. And then you ferment it and you let it get nice and rotten.
And then you eat it, and you enjoy it.
Your food description on this one.
Ugh.
Yeah. So you
let it get rotten.
And then you eat it,
and it's a delicacy. But I've asked people, but it's not for everybody. So I think even in those cultures where it's considered something that's relatively popular, you're still going to find people that are going to be, that's pretty gross.
Yeah. Go back to the bugs for just a second. Every time.
Like I'm the bug sommelier. He's like, what have you got in a...
Every time the cicadas come out, you see people come out with all these recipes for preparing cicadas and enjoying them. But I can't imagine a scenario where I would need to do that.
Well,
why would you want that?
If it's the 17-year cicadas, then you really got to maybe build up.
You have a long wait.
With the McRib, there's some space between
it builds up
a lot of anticipation.
Sure.
People get excited.
Of course.
I think that those, they got to taste probably like a bug, right? They got to taste
bugs.
As good or bad as a bug typically tastes. But I think more of that is kind of the gimmicky thing. Like, what are you going to do with them? We've all had that crazy friend, right?
That'll just eat anything.
Light a firecracker off in his fingers and it'll eat a bug. That guy.
Right.
So he's the
guy. But they always have like chocolate dipped cicadas or a cinnamon sprinkled cicada. Why?
Think about it. Shrimp, if you look at what they look like, and lobsters too.
Yeah.
Who knows? Maybe a cicada tastes just like a lobster.
Wow. Yeah, they have those, and I know we brought back some of the little suckers lollipops with either like ants in it or scorpions in it or something. I think a lot of it is just gimmick. It's something kind of fun. It's kind of crazy. But for some of these, the things that you'll see at Strange Food Festival, it's a mainstay as far as one of the kind of the food staples in that culture. So you'll see that stuff.
At several restaurants that I've been to, not necessarily in the continental United States, but more in Mexico and Turks and Caicos Islands, when they serve the shrimp are served with the head on it. it, and I could do without that.
I could totally do without that.
I don't need to see the shrimp's head.
What about crawfish? They have
that. I want to see their head.
You do?
I want to look them right in the eyes.
Wouldn't you see handsome scale right in the animal kingdom?
Yeah, them I'm fine with, but shrimp, no.
Okay, so you've got things that are real foods, and then you've got stuff on the spooky factor. You say, okay, you don't want to eat a spider, you don't want to eat some larva or whatever, but you want to have something that's kind of freaky and weird, but on Halloween that replicates something that maybe you wouldn't want to eat.
Mm-hmm.
And so they do this with pretzels or some of those little kind of candy sticks, kind of pastry sticks. You dip them in some chocolate, you glue like an almond or a pumpkin seed on the top, and you've got yourself some lady fingers or men's toes. It looks really gross, but it's something that...
Men's toes, the fresh maker?
I guess I don't...
Mentos.
I looked at some of the pictures, and people could still improve upon that. They don't look stubby enough, at least for my toes. Maybe I don't
You
know.
Want them to look legit. Yeah. You want them to look real.
Yeah. And then the guacamole eyeballs.
Is this similar to, like, at haunted houses when I was a kid, they would peel grapes and they'd pass them around and go, oh, it's witch's eyeballs.
This is visual, Bill. So you'll see like deviled eggs, but it's guacamole in there. And then you throw an olive on top. You've got guacamole eyeballs. You've got severed fingered hot dogs where you're actually allowed to put the ketchup on it.
Fun. I like that.
Yeah. Yeah. And then these are too gross. I don't know what this has to do with Halloween, but these are disgusting. But kitty litter. There's like kitty litter cake. So what it is, imagine like a cake pan with crumbled graham crackers and things like that, some twisted up Tootsie Rolls in there, a little spatula to go ahead and pull the kitty litter out.
You're making my mouth water.
It looks very realistic, and they said beware, do not let a real cat near it
because it's so realistic.
Otherwise
looking.
It'll be the Russian roulette of spooky desserts. And then this was, I think, the grossest one is the secondhand swab. Imagine a toothpick with two small marshmallows on the end, kind of looking like a Q-tip, dipped in caramel on the sides.
Oh, God. Yes. Really?
That's it's got to taste really good, but it's just not really one of those cool things. But, Bill, you mentioned this is the, and we remember as kids, back when we trusted, hey, reach in here and feel what it is. And usually it's a gauntlet of something, to get a prize at the end, you've got to get through the scary gauntlet. You would reach in, you don't get to see these things, but they are items in there. And you mentioned, the grapes.
The peeled grapes.
Peeled eyeballs. Grapes as eyeballs, right? Fuzzy pipe cleaners. And good thing the kids are at school. They're not hearing this. Spider legs, baby carrots could be toes. Steamed cauliflower is brains.
Yeah.
Oh,
kind of hard. Although brains aren't that hard.
Are they really?
Not.
I don't think. I mean, I've never felt a brain.
As a serial killer.
Right.
You've got candy corn could be vampire teeth. A peeled tomato could be a heart.
Oh, that's good.
Maybe. Yeah. Yeah. All right.
Cooked noodles or guts, pastas, bones, pudding could be mud. Wet tortilla as skins.
Yeah.
And then with skins, oftentimes, and unfortunately, if you don't have the right set, potato chips could be scabs.
Oh, God. People are eating lunch at this time.
We're eating lunch.
It's Halloween.
They're not eating lunch anymore.
Overcooked rice as maggots. I mean, so there's a lot of...
God help us all.
Yeah, sliced melon could be tongue.
That's even grossing me out, and I'm the prince of darkness.
You made Ozzy Osbourne upset.
Yeah. So that's a way for, to terrorize your children
and
have them under the impression that they're doing horrible, disgusting things when they're not.
Of course. That's fun. All right. We'll take a quick break and then more of this sort of behavior. We're 312-981-7200. If you'd like to complain, it's Bill and Wendy on WGN.
I put a spell on you. Because you're mine.
I love this song.
Dane Neal is here, Wendy. He's the host of On the Road with Dane Neal. Which do you love more, Dane Neal or this song?
The song. Sorry, Dane. Sorry,
that's
Dane.
All right.
Came in second.
It just gives me something to shoot for.
Silver medalist. Nothing wrong with
that's
that.
That's right. I'm first loser, as the kids would say.
Are there haunted restaurants in and around Chicago? There can't be.
Well, one of the previous guests obviously shared that Chicago is a longtime place where a lot of stuff happened. People live, were born, enjoyed.
Died
in a bunch of different ways. Yeah. And so there's a lot of haunted stuff. And sure, there's some haunted restaurants around and haunted. These are places where people spent a lot of time.
Yeah.
Right? People worked, a lot of that stuff. And there's some not only in the city, but also, we've got a couple I was going to mention. Country House is like one of those kind of...
That's Wendy.
Out near us, Clarendon Hills.
Known for their great burgers and the hauntedness. And it seems as though they... have embraced it, because I think it's a fine line. You want to be just haunted enough to be interesting, but not so much that like people you know,
are
feel
afraid
like,
to come in.
Yeah, that it's going to be an issue.
What? It's the ghost once picked up my check over
what?
At Country
That's
House.
Very generous.
That's actually a great. Very got to make a commercial for that, and you never know.
How do the ghosts or spirits or apparitions? How do they manifest themselves at Country House?
Because I know what you're thinking, Bill, spitting the food, and that's not something
they wouldn't
that
do that.
We haven't.
Come on,
no, ghosts wouldn't do that.
As long as you don't complain about it,
right?
So the steak's underdone.
Right.
A lot of times, it's just you know for the people that work there that's long hours, you know, if there's an office there or a basement there or a place where they go to either get the food or store things or work on things, and mm-hmm. it's usually unfortunately for those people that go to those places hoping to see something, it's usually the people that are there working that end up running into the things.
Yeah.
And you know what, the more interviews you hear with them, they kind of take it in stride. Oh yeah, that's
just the ghost
like
of the
Spooky
place.
Larry, you know. Yeah. he takes your pen, you know, or whatever it is. Yeah. Or he turns the radio on or makes the lights flicker, things like that. But some of the places, you know, they kind of just kind of work it into their marketing plan. I love that, Wendy, that sometimes the ghost may pick up your check.
Yeah,
that's good.
At Country House.
They should do that. I mean, management should do that because just
every
that
once
would,
in a while,
just
occasionally,
yeah.
And then act like, well, geez, this is crazy.
Right.
This is unexplainable.
Told you we were haunted.
And get one of those meters, like, click, 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 click. I don't know, I'm sensing some paranormal.
That's
like,
a great idea.
Like dining ticket. But, do you believe in that stuff? I mean, do you have
me?
Yeah.
Uh-uh.
No.
Okay. I do.
Wendy's
okay.
A big
I totally
believer.
Do.
See, I'm kind of the. I'm open to the fact that it is, because how could all these people be wrong, right?
Yeah.
And then I'm also, but I got to close myself off to it. My mom always said that, like, oh, we had a Ouija board and a couple times we'd do it. And then sometimes, you know, she'd say like, hey, do you want it? And I'm like, absolutely not. Cause you'd say like, if you show that you're open to it, you're interested in it, then they show up. Then they show up and hang out.
Oh.
And I never wanted that.
You don't
that.
Want that?
So Wendy, you guys have a Ouija board?
Yes, I don't have it anymore. I don't know what happened to it. But
since
I know
the fire.
I mean, who yeah. was it? Milton Bradley or Parker Brothers? One of the two made it, sold it. It was mass produced. Yet my mom still had weird feelings of us playing it.
Yeah,
yeah.
Well, we had it, but she wouldn't let us play it.
There's got to be something to that.
We were like that with Gnip-Gnop.
I loved that.
Connect Four. One of the cool things is when you can learn more about it, and no Ouija, this is a no Ouija, no seance zone, because surprisingly, there's laws against it when it comes to presentation. Jim Bergstrom from Red Lion Pub, one of the, by Discovery Channel's estimation, one of the most haunted places in the country right here in Chicago, and he has a manifestation dinner that not only feeds you some pretty good fish and chips, but also share some of the stories. Jim, welcome to the show.
Yes, it's great to be here. Thank you, Dane. Thank you for, you know, it's such a thrill to be to talk to a big shot investigative reporter like you, like Dane Neal.
Yes, it is.
You're to be here.
A paranormal researcher, that's your title. But fill Bill and Wendy in and what you're doing over at Red Lion on the scary, spooky side.
Well, it's at the Red Lion Pub, which is 2446 North Lincoln. And we've been doing it a little over 3 years. Every Saturday night at 5:00, it's Manifestations of Chicago's only ghost dinner. And here's what happened. Shortly after the Red Lion reopened, I got a call from a private paranormal research institute. I'm a magician and an actor, and they found out about my background that I worked at the Red Lion. And they asked me if I'd like to be trained to be a spirit medium to run seance events out of the Red Lion and then report back to them on a monthly basis. So I've been doing that for a little over 3 years now, every Saturday night at 5:00. But the training was fabulous. I had to take 13 different training courses about the who, the why, the where, the what, the how, and about specific things that I had witnessed at the Red Lion myself, even in the short time they had been reopened. And we find out late in my training, I'd finished the 11th course, and we find out that seances are illegal in the state of Illinois.
You can have them, I think, but you can't call them or refer to them as seances. Is that
exactly
how it goes?
It's a very, very fine line that we're walking. So I had to have a meeting with the institute lawyers and some local lawyers, and they said, well, you cannot use the word seance. You cannot claim to be contacting a specific dead spirit on the premises. They said the argument was that under, even though it seems like it's certainly happening, you can't prove that in a laboratory situation. They said, or in a court of law. And I said, well, that's probably true. You can't prove that.
So it builds in, you know, a kind of the fun, sort of that, just kind of the excitement, right, of the whole kind of paranormal,
right.
The other side thing, along with some great food.
It's got the most popular food on the menu. It's a two-course meal and a glass of wine, a beer, or a cocktail, and a tax and a tip on that. And the whole manifestations experience, which is now, instead of being called a seance, these are now, it's the exact same activity, but they're presented as paranormal experiments to see if the joint is haunted or not.
Nice.
And there's even a souvenir for each attendee to take home. And again, we've been going strong for over 3 years. It's a lot of fun. There are a few laughs along the way, I'm happy to say. And it's a very, very creepy experience during, before, and after, too.
Jim, if people want more information, how do they get that?
They can go to the Red Lion website, and they can also go to brownpapertickets.com to buy tickets directly every Saturday night at 5 o'clock. And my website is chicagohistoricalhauntings.com.
That's Jim Bergstrom.
All right, thanks, Jim.
From the Red Lion Pub.
Yes.
All right. Thank you so much,
Jim. Thank you, Jim.
Thanks, Jim.
Food and spirits.
It isn't just Halloween time. You could do that throughout the year. Ghosts, you know, they never take a day off.
No, they don't. They don't. You don't either, Dane. Hardest working man in this room.
I don't know.
That doesn't say anything.
It can't be. Well, tune in Saturday because we're going to be doing some of that hard work too. On Saturday
at what time? That's 2 to 4?
2 to 4.
Very good. Thank you, Dane.
Yes.
Appreciate it.
Thank you.
A break and then some news. And then Svengoolie stops by. It's Bill and Wendy, WGN.
Been working on your xylophone.
Wendy, thank you for noticing. I'm trying my best to impress our next two guests. Rich Coase is here. Jim Roach is here. You know and love Rich Coase's Svengoolie, and Jim Roach, of course, the executive producer of that same program. Hello,
we don't
guys.
Know and love him.
No, nobody loves him.
We
that's
like
right.
him.
I keep waiting for the jingle. Everything for Halloween, pumpkinslime.com. But I haven't heard that yet, so I'm...
Happy Halloween, boys.
Wow. Well, thank you so much, and the same to you. Yeah. And thank I have you. To say, Wendy, your costume is perfect. You did
thank
such
you.
A fine job. I keep waiting for you to go, the old skate style on Spudio, Sharon!
Yes. I don't have material, really.
Just
I just
look.
Have the look.
We'll write you some.
All right, good.
That's fun. Boy, what an honor. All of a sudden, the new edition of Mad Magazine comes out, and guess who's in it? You.
I know.
That's fantastic.
It is. It's pretty amazing. They did a great little sort of, and it's funny because they didn't call me like, you know, Svengoolie or something. It's really my character.
Yeah.
And the whole thing is they did a great job. Ian Boothby wrote it, and Tom Richmond did the artwork. And it's supposed to be me trying to show horror movies, but the horror movies keep getting mixed up with other MeTV shows. And they did just such a great job. I really love the fact that, like, the Tom's artwork in the background, it looks just like the old original 1950s
Jack
type
Davis.
Stuff. Yeah,
the Jack
with
Davis
the little
stuff.
Things going on, all sorts of little gags all over the place.
Yeah.
And it's great. It came about because when we were doing the C2E2 convention once, there was a guy waiting in line, and he's waiting patiently for us and waiting patiently, you know, comes up to the front. Turns out it's Dan DiDio, the publisher of DC Comics.
Wow.
Who was a fan of the show.
Wow.
And, you know, we've been in touch back and forth, and he kept saying, you know, the perfect place for you to be in Mad Magazine.
Yes.
And we were like, yeah, okay, sure. You know, thinking, that'll never happen. And sure enough, they got in touch with us and did this whole story.
What an honor. First an action figure, now you're in Mad Magazine. What is next?
Well, if you're watching that, what is it, The Chilling Adventures of Sabrina on mm-hmm. Netflix, they're telling me, in the sixth episode, about 9 minutes in, Sabrina's Aunt Hilda is trying to get a job at a restaurant that appears to be run by a former TV horror host, and she's going down a whole, I love TV horror hosts, Svengoolie.
Yeah. Yeah?
And you know, I'm wow. getting all these emails from people. Did you know you were mentioned in that?
That's excellent.
It is. It's,
what, did Mark Hamill
amazing.
Email you and tell you were mentioned in that?
No. But do you want the Mark Hamill story, the latest one?
Oh, you have an update.
Yes. He sends me a message on Twitter, and he says, hey, Svengoolie, because, you know, your
you're on
name
the first name basis.
Yes.
Yes, Luke Skywalker, what can I do for you?
Yes, my son. He says, I'm working in Prague right now, and through some miracle, they get me TV there.
Oh, my God.
I do not know how. And he said, I was so excited, and I set my alarm clock for 5 a.m. in the morning so I could watch Abbott and Costello meet Frankenstein.
Yeah.
The problem was that I think he was going by Pacific time, and we think that the feed was maybe East Coast. But he said, well, my daughter woke up at 3, and she said you were on then. So I was like, okay, so we're on in Prague.
That's
so.
All you
I
need.
I was watching that live as it happened. That was 2 weeks ago?
Yeah, two weeks ago.
Mm-hmm. Abbott and Costello. Everybody, star-studded cast in that movie.
It's got them all. It's got the Wolfman. It's got Bela as Dracula.
Mm-hmm.
It's got Glenn Strange as the monster. And it's got Buddenlew as Buddenlew.
And we've discussed this in the past. It's one of the movies that pulls off being scary and funny simultaneously.
Yeah, and does such a great job of it, too. You know, it's almost like there is the comic relief.
Yeah.
But, boy, there are times when there's stuff in there that I think is really, really, you know, going to have you on the edge of your seat.
Well, I asked you once why you thought it was scary, and you said because we came to know and love Buddenlew, and the last thing we wanted to see was them in any kind of peril. We don't want to see them in trouble.
Sure, exactly. And they are in big trouble several times through the whole thing. And the one thing everybody brings up, you know, as if I wouldn't know, they go, oh, did you notice in the one scene, Dracula's going to bite the girl on the neck and it's reflected in a mirror and you see him?
Yeah.
That's not right. And I'm like, yeah, I mentioned that on the show.
Yeah.
Thanks. Well, thanks for paying attention.
That's all right.
And what time is it on now?
Sven, well, it's not on now.
It's not on
right.
No, it's
when it's on, in Prague, it though, right now, yeah. So she can watch
For
it.
Those of you watching in Prague, Saturday nights on MeTV at 7 o'clock Central Time.
Yeah.
And it gets rerun the next weekend at 11 a.m. on WCIU.
Okay.
So if you miss it Saturday night, you can watch it the next Saturday morning.
Yeah. Before you were Svengoolie, a man named Jerry G. Bishop was Svengoolie. You worked for him, and your story is amazing. You were going to Northwestern. You started writing for the show. Mm-hmm. You worked your way up through the ranks, and now you are Svengoolie. But I remember in those early days of Svengoolie when it wasn't live action. There were just pictures, and it wasn't even pictures of him, really, in the beginning, was it?
In the beginning, there was one slide that had the title, and I think it was like either a woman or a man screaming.
Yeah,
that's
what I
remember. And it was almost like a drawing type thing or a high-res still photo.
Yeah.
And it was like that. He just happened to be the guy who was the staff announcer, because back then they had live staff announcers at TV stations. He was the one on duty Friday nights when they were running these god-awful movies, and he just started doing the accent and started making jokes and stuff and encouraging people to send in jokes. And so I was a fan of his from his radio stuff and the TV stuff, and just started sending him stuff. And he liked some of the stuff I sent him and some of the stuff I made up. And he said, he started to ask for specific things, like, can you do a parody of this commercial that's running now? And can you do a parody of this song or something like that? And as it was going along, they made it a live action show done on videotape, of course.
Yeah, yeah.
And he dressed up as his sort of, you know, hippie ghoul type outfit with the long green hair.
But even then, it was just still photography.
The first ones were, yes. Yeah. There was a whole collection of stills. I think I may even still have some at home somewhere. But there must have been, you know, 100 or more.
Yeah.
And they just, you know, cycle through them. And it was silly things like him holding a skull, pretending to kiss it. And, you know, pretending he's playing guitar on a tennis racket, things like that.
Yeah.
And then it eventually went to video.
Yeah. Yeah, I remember every once in a while he'd have a surprise celebrity guest on with him, and my favorite one was the week he had Jay North, who played Dennis the Menace, was on with him.
Oh, yeah.
I thought it was such a great meeting of the minds, Svengoolie and Jay North, Dennis the Menace.
Yeah, it was so funny, because they'd have people, that was back when there were the nightclubs like the Blue Max.
Yeah.
And Mr. Kelly's and things like that. And they would actually bring in people. The PR people loved to bring in different stars and stuff. And one of my favorites was they brought in Rudy Valli.
Oh, they did?
Now, Rudy Valli was getting up there in age.
Yeah.
And he's trying to read cue cards. And, I'd like to say, Shane Gooley? Is it Shane Gooley? And Jerry went, yeah, whatever. And once Rudy finished up, the big question he had for everybody was, do you know where there's a good cheap cafeteria?
Oh, really?
Did he have his megaphone with him?
No, that was just he did not have a megaphone.
That's so funny. Rich Coase is here. Jim Roach is here from Svengoolie. It's Halloween. Where else would they be? Stick around. We've got more to discuss with you on Bill and Wendy. Bill Leff, it's Wendy Snyder. Our guests are Rich Coase, you know him as Svengoolie, and Jim Roach, he's the executive producer of Svengoolie's show. Speaking of TV.
Yes.
I keep watching a show, and every time I see it, I'm thinking of you.
What's that?
And that's this show called The History of Horror. It's on AMC.
Oh, sure.
Eli Roth. Yeah. Mm-hmm. He put it together. What do you think of that program?
It's pretty interesting. I like the fact that there's some of the people that they have on there who are fans of my show.
Yeah.
Like Tom Savini and Rob Zombie. But yeah, it's kind of a cool take on very, each week is a different topic, I think.
A different type of movie monster, vampires or demons or wolves or whatever.
Thrashers or
slashers.
Robert Englund was on there. I was thinking of Rob Zombie for that.
There you go, yeah. Yeah, Robert Englund was on there. It's really pretty interesting. I don't know that you can use it as a definitive source.
No.
But it's pretty
interesting. What do you think is the definitive source? Because there's one that comes to mind for me right away, but what would you call the definitive source
on horror
on
movies?
The history of horror movies?
Wow, that's hard to say. I know there was one group of shows that they did with Christopher Lee where he talks about the various movies, and I think they've cut it up to use it as features on one of the movie channels or something.
Let me recommend, there's a book by John Landis he put out a couple years ago about the history of horror movies that is incredibly great.
Sure.
And Stephen King did a book called Dance Macabre about it, too.
Yes, which is also is a great thing to learn about writing from.
Yeah.
You know, Stephen King, I've got a pile of his books, and I've got a pile more that I haven't even gotten to on my nightstand, and he just came out with another one.
Yeah.
Oh, my Lord, that man is unbelievable. But yeah, it's great to read that stuff because you do get more of an insight into exactly, you know, what's scaring us and why. And I always enjoy kind of seeing people's viewpoints on that.
Why do creepy kids scare us so much? Because kids are supposed to be innocent?
Well, I think that's part of it. I think, you know, kids are supposed to be lovable little tykes, you know?
Right.
And when there's an edge to them like that, it's just absolutely frightening. There, on MeTV, we run the Alfred Hitchcock.
He's kind of kitschy.
But there was one story that they ran where a bunch of neighborhood kids were getting these things for growing some kind of mushrooms in their basement. And this little boy is doing it, and it turns out, I don't want to ruin it for him, but it gets really, really creepy.
Yeah.
I mean, really, it made chills run down my back. I'm sitting there watching this, and it's how old, and it's this little half-hour show. And by the end of it, I was really creeped out. I wish I could remember the title of it.
Think about Patty McCormick in The Bad Seed, or Harvey Stevens in The Omen, or the kids in The Brood.
Yes.
There's something about seeing kids going off the rails that is really petrifying to us.
Jay North and Dennis the Menace.
Jay North and Dennis the Menace.
Mr. Wilson will never be the same.
Right. No, the Olsen twins. I mean, the list goes on and on and on.
Well, they're still scary.
Yeah, they are.
But that's right. And I think it really is part of that. You know, children, it's supposed to be this innocence and, you know, friendly little kids.
Yeah.
And when you see these kids that have this evil intent, it scares you and makes you look at your kids and go, okay, well,
are they going to kill me while I'm sleeping?
Sleep with one eye open.
They make it a point in one of the episodes of the show to say that a lot of times we're more scared by what we're not seeing, and they talk about what you think you see in Psycho in the shower, where the knife never actually penetrates Janet Leigh, but in your head you saw it happen even though it never happened. In Jaws, when you don't see the shark, it's scarier than seeing the shark.
Yeah, and again, that works off your own imagination, because possibly what you imagine is happening is far worse than what they could have put on the screen.
Yes.
It's a matter of, it's like the old radio shows.
Yeah. It is,
and
isn't it?
It is.
It's true.
Because you're creating the pictures in your mind, and at times, like I said, it's probably more scary, and maybe it's a little more personal, too, because you're the one that's creating that image.
What did you ask us yesterday? Which one of the characters are you most afraid of or something?
Yeah, if great question. Thank you, Wendy. That's a fantastic question.
I'm just reminding you of your own question from yesterday.
If you're looking at the big four and maybe beyond. So the big four are your Draculas, your Frankenstein monsters, your mummies, your Wolfmans, and you can even go Creature of the Black Lagoon or Invisible Man. Who's the one you least want to be chased down an alley by?
Well, I think we've said before, you don't worry about the mummy because he's got that dragon foot thing and he's never going to catch you. You know.
Yes.
You can outrun him.
Yeah, you can tease him.
Even I could outrun the mummy, for God's sake.
Nice bandages, Kairos. And I think it's really, with me, a tie between Dracula and the Wolfman.
Yeah.
Because Dracula, first of all, you know, he's got that sort of hypnotic power, and you can't break that.
Yeah.
And the fact that he's going to, if he keeps biting you, you're going to be dead.
Yeah.
And then there's the savagery of the Wolfman, because, you know, it's like a wild animal attacking you. And how do you stop a wild animal? especially one like that, that you can't kill unless you have a silver bullet.
Yeah. And you have to charm him.
Well, you could do that, but
the rest of us are
not
trouble.
Me.
But I said the vampire, but really that's kind of romantic in a weird way, and it's a bite which mm-hmm. probably would hurt. But now you've got me going with Wolfman, because that's going to be a very savage attack, as you mentioned.
Right. It's like, you know, going to Brookfield Zoo and saying, hey, can I step into the lion's cage there for a second?
Yeah.
Which they won't let you do.
No, they're against that.
But, I think that whole animalistic type thing where, you know, and he's so quick. You know, Dracula, he's not a fast guy, but he doesn't have to be.
But
you know?
He can materialize into or shapeshift into a bat and catch up to you.
Right, yeah. But you can hit him with a baseball bat.
Oh, I guess.
Send him out of the park. Hey.
What about that moment in so many of the Universal Dracula movies where he goes from Bela Lugosi to a bat or the opposite, and it's animated, and it's so obviously fake, but it's still really creepy and scary?
Wait a minute, that's fake?
Yeah, no, it's fake,
it's
Jim.
Real, Jim. Don't worry about it. Well, I think that, and there's some people who are disagreeing with this currently, and I don't know where they got their information, but that animation was done by the Walter Lantz students who did Woody Woodpecker. And just recently somebody said, no, it was done by somebody else at Universal, and it's like, okay, go ahead and prove it. We don't care. But for years it's been attributed to Walter Lantz, who worked at Universal and made all his cartoons through there.
Which would explain why Chilly Willy played important roles in so many of those early vampire movies.
He was like the Renfield to him, you know. More butter, more syrup. It's a very strange thing.
All right. My youngest son, Dylan, has requested a subscription to Mad Magazine for Christmas this year, but I'm going to share this with him.
Oh, yeah.
You can get this on newsstands now?
Yep. Yeah, it finally came out. It's in comic book stores and various newsstands and bookstores at this point.
Aside from you being in it, it's one of my favorite Mad Magazine covers of all time. It's Alfred E. Newman as both the twin sisters from The Shining. What a great picture this is.
Yeah, I thought that was
really
very
funny.
Clever. Oh, I should tell you what I'm doing tonight.
Please, what are you doing tonight?
Svengoolie has been invited by the Chicago Bulls to help host the Bulls game tonight at the United
Center.
They're
having a scary season, Rich, so this is a good timing.
They're going to have me do free throws with rubber chickens from what I understand.
Oh, right on.
That might be difficult. But yeah, I'm really looking forward to it. It's a nice way to wind up our Halloween season, because we've been going since the middle of September doing appearances and such. And I feel like, you know, all the heavy-duty stuff is over and all the hard work, and tonight should just be fun.
That's great.
And then what do we look for on Saturday night? What's going to be the movie?
Oh, Saturday night, it's a favorite. It was a made-for-TV movie, but it's one of those ones just like Duel that people always remember. And sometimes I wonder, do they remember it better than it really is? I'm not quite sure. Gargoyles?
Love that movie.
You know that?
Jennifer Salt?
Jennifer Salt is in it. Cornel Wilde is
always good.
He's wild.
And the late Bernie Casey is the lead gargoyle. So there's a woman there too who runs the motel. I think she was somebody in Dark Shadows, the TV show.
Oh, is it Grayson Hall?
Yes,
it's Grayson Hall.
That's right. Well done, Bill.
That was my room in college. That's where I stayed. Grayson Hall.
That was the dorm. I remember that. Yes.
And don't forget a young Scott Glenn in this.
A very young Scott Glenn is in it. Yeah.
Wow. So Gargoyles is the movie.
Yes.
Gargoyles is the movie, and you'll enjoy the fact that as far as them actually doing any flying. Due to the special effects budget, there's just a very little bit of that.
It's all right. Just enough. Always great to see you guys, especially on Halloween. We know how busy you both are, so it's so good that you came by. We really appreciate it.
Always a pleasure.
Yeah, and like I've told you, I love your show.
Oh, thanks, Rich.
You guys. I laugh constantly at it. And
it's not meant to be funny, but thank you.
But seriously.
See, now that's funny.
You guys always brighten my day, and I appreciate it.
Thank you, Rich.
Well, you
Rich
do the same.
It's thanks. Rich Coase. It's Jim Roach from Svengoolie, an institution.
Absolutely.
We belong in one.
Thank you.
Hey, good night, everybody.
Try the veal.
We'll take a quick break and then find out what's coming up on the Wintrust Business Line.
And coming up, the stories that matter with Kim Gordon from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom.